Tejasvi Vaad has been a leader in the LGBT and social justice movements for nearly three decades. She's here to give us her spin on LGBT issues and talk about being honored with GLAAD Spirit of Justice Award. Hi, Arvashi.
Hi, Charlotte. Happy to be here with you today.
What's your spin on the U.S. Supreme Court denying review of all petitions regarding the marriage equality cases?
Well, I think that they are not willing to overrule their opinion in Windsor. And the cases that they were confronted with presented a number of issues, but by taking no action, they left the lower court decisions stand, and those decisions have rejected marriage equality bans, challenged the constitutionality of those bans. So I think this is a great decision, no doubt about it. A great non-decision, shall we say.
So how will this affect marriage equality across the country?
Well, according to Freedom to Marry, it means that marriage equality is now available in 24 states in the District of Columbia, and that this decision by the Supreme Court opens the door in six other states, like Colorado and Kansas, among others. And in each of those states, there's going to be continued legal challenges, because states like South Carolina, they've already indicated they're not going to just, you know, roll over and allow marriage equality. Eventually, they will have to, because the legal status of recognition of our marriage rights is pretty clear. It has been for decades, and our legal advocates have been brilliant in litigating these cases over so many jurisdictions and over so many years. So I think it will pave the way for those six states. And then it still leaves open some questions that the court, you know, has yet to squarely take on the right to marry. They've been kind of doing it in a sideways way. They only overturned a portion of DOMA. And so I think there are still going to be legal challenges that go up to the Supreme Court, but not these. The irony is that there are states in which marriage equality will be allowed, but discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity is not outlawed. So you can get fired for being gay or trans, but you can get married. That's kind of ironic, and that signals the work that we still have to do.
You founded LPAC, the Lesbian Political Action Committee. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Many people, including me, believe in campaign finance reform and think that the influence of PACs is disproportionate. On the other hand, I personally don't believe in unilateral disarmament, and I want to use all the tools that are available to us as organizers and voters to promote the candidacy of great people who are progressive, who are pro-gay, pro-feminist, and progressive. And LPAC originated from that desire to support progressive candidates who are pro-lesbian and pro-feminist. But we also emerged out of a desire to organize a bit more political power and voice among lesbians. I got tired of going to fundraiser after fundraiser and seeing very few women in the room, and going to political meetings with leaders, you know, at the national level, political leaders, and seeing very few women in the room, and very few trans people in the room, and very few people of color in the room, and I really want to try to change that. And so I started talking to a bunch of other politically active women around the country who've been working in our movement for many, many years in different local organizations and community centers and whatever, and everybody agreed that there was a gap in political activism among LGBT women, so we formed LPAC with a dual goal of supporting great candidates who are progressive across three lenses, pro-social and racial economic justice, pro-LGBT rights, and pro-women's rights, but also in organizing LGBT women to be more involved in the political process, to pay attention, to be engaged in voting, to be part of local committees and campaigns that are speaking to our issues. And, you know, just today a report came out from the Women Donors Network, which says that like 42,000 public offices in this country, only 29% are held by women. It's a really bad ratio. We really need to increase the representation of different kinds of people, the engagement of different kinds of people in our political process. Now, not all women are progressive. LPAC's view is we're particularly interested in pro-feminist and pro-LGBT women. and men. We support women and men. We've got a really robust slate of candidates that we've supported in the midterm elections, including the woman who's running for governor in Wisconsin, Mary Burke, the woman running for governor in New Hampshire. There's about 14 or 16 different campaigns that we've contributed to. So that's the story of LPAC. It's still a startup. It's all volunteer. Next year, we're going to be hiring a full-time executive director. And the wonderful thing about it is that anybody can join. Go to teamlpac.com, and you can learn about it. But you can give a dollar and be part of LPAC. There's no donation too small or large.
You're being honored by GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, with the Spirit of Justice Award. Tell us about that event that's happening in Boston on October 24th.
Well, GLAAD is a tremendous civil rights organization that has been pioneering legal and legislative change, policy change in New England for three decades now. And I was lucky enough as a baby law student, when I was a law student at Northeastern in the early 80s, to be a volunteer at GLAAD when it was just a startup. So I have a long and very warm and strong association with GLAAD and a lot of respect for the incredible people who have worked there over the years and the work that they've done. So it's a real honor to be selected for this award. It's their annual big dinner that they have. It's October 24th. People can go on the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders website to find out more about the event.
What would you like to see happen for LGBT equality in the next few years?
I would really like us to do two things. One, to take care of the parts of our community that are less powerful. That means low-income LGBT people, transgender people in our communities, women whose rights are getting the crap kicked out of them. Parts of our community across the board, kids, old gay people, parts of our community that are less powerful than middle or upper middle class professionals like me, right? So that's one thing I want for our organizations, our donors, our foundations, our media outlets to focus the spotlight and focus their work on the full parts of our community. The second thing I would love is for the LGBT movement to use its political power and access to create a more just society for all. We have done a great job advancing and pulling together. And that kind of unity that got us to this point, I would like to see it sustain over the next few years so that we can use that power that we've been organizing for to really push back some of the right-wing policies in this country and to really push for a more inclusive and just society, which is the queer vision. I mean, it really is. You know, LGBT people vote more progressive in general. LGBT people care about the environment. We care about leaving a better world for our children and for future generations. And those sets of values that we have of compassion, of community building, of caring, of stepping up and shouldering responsibility, which we have shown again and again, I hope are the qualities that will guide our movement in the coming years.
LGBTQ teens are four times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers, and we continue to have numerous teens take their own lives after facing bullying incidents. What advice would you have for these kids?
I think the best advice is to try to break through the isolation that you're feeling. There are so many places now to turn to for support, for a friendly ear. Whatever the crisis is that is in young people's lives, whether it's familial rejection or family ostracism or all sorts of other realities that people are facing, economic hardship, alcohol and drug abuse issues, violence that they may have experienced, whatever the challenges are, you don't have to face them alone. And that's the biggest advice I would give. Find friends, find people who can be supportive and guide you and be with you through this.
How can people get information about the Spirit of Justice Award dinner?
People can get information about the dinner at glad.org, GLAD.org. It's at the Marriott Copley Plaza Hotel in Boston on October 24th.
What other projects are you working on?
I'm working on several interesting policy projects. I'm based at the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia Law School, and it's a think tank as well as a teaching center which trains lawyers. But my particular project has been focused on parts of our communities that are getting less attention, and to try to do some organizing and coalition building to shine the spotlight on those parts of the community. So I've been working on criminal justice policy and LGBT people, and starting to work on developing an economic justice policy agenda for the LGBT movement. On criminal justice policy, about 50 organizations came together last year, and we worked to develop a federal policy agenda, what the Obama administration could do over the next couple of years administratively that would really help LGBT people in different parts of the criminal justice system. It's a report called A Roadmap for Change, and you can access it by just Googling A Roadmap for Change. It's on various organizations' websites. And it outlines the kind of challenges that LGBT people and people living with HIV face in several different areas. In the arena of law enforcement and policing, there's still harassment, there's still profiling that happens of LGBT people, particularly LGBT people of color. There's a lot of challenges that we've had historically with police and law enforcement as a gay community, and some of those continue. The report covers prisons and jails, and there's a whole lot of work that needs to be done to address the needs of LGBT people who are incarcerated. It addresses school discipline, it addresses HIV criminalization, it addresses drivers to incarceration, it addresses immigration detention. So these are the kinds of arenas in which we're trying to lift up a response by our government to the problems that LGBT people face.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
I have many, but one of my favorites was a friend of mine. I was like particularly being broody and down on everything, and she said, "Irvishi, you're bigger than it. You're bigger than it." And it just made me laugh. I am bigger than it, whatever it is. So that's one of the quotes I use when I get down on myself, and that's the one I'm going to